From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Emerging artists for the first couple hours tonight and later tonight, follow your instincts, your inner GPS. Here's what's happening. Former Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko asserted that the Russian President Vladimir Putin is a war criminal for the disastrous humanitarian situation inflicted on the Ukrainian people, arguing that now the 11-day conflict should be considered a common war as the risk to global security rises each day there. At least 4,600 people detained during protests in Russia on Sunday. An independent monitoring group that tracks detentions in Russia made this report. People have been detained in 147 Russian cities, according to the report. Since the invasion, more than 13,000 people have been arrested in Russia in anti-war demonstrations. Russian state news agency TASS cited the Russian Interior Ministry, which said it arrested 3,500 people that took part in unauthorized public events on Sunday. And U.S. oil crude surged more than 8% in early trading on Sunday evening as the market continued to react to supply disruptions stemming from Russia's ongoing invasion of the Ukraine and the possibility of a ban on Russian oil and natural gas. Charles R. Smith, author of Deception, with us. Charles, were you surprised that Putin went in the way he did?
Not really. What I am surprised at is the inability of the Russian army to mobilize and operate very well. However, considering the situation where their troops and soldiers were literally not told where they were going, it's not a shocking surprise, because normally if your Western forces, for example, will give extensive briefings, maps, and other things directly to their troops in line, whereas that did not take place here with the Russian forces.
No, not at all. But now, where do we go from here? What happens next? Are they going to negotiate this thing out of here?
It looks like Putin is attempting to mobilize the Russian Air Force. I've already seen satellite images this week, actually this evening, of Russian AWACS. Those are airborne radar planes moving into Belarus. So the indication is that we may very well see the Russian Air Force move up their heavy bombers and attempt to use them. That's not good for negotiations or for anyone because, well, the Russian Air Force is not well known for precision strike. It's more mass bombing type of operations.
All right, Charlie, we'll keep in touch. To get ahead in life, the most successful person is a team player, they say. New research reports having the personality trait agreeableness can improve your job performance and help you win in life. Just remember that. A ghost is the soul or spirit of a dead person or animal that can appear to the living, they say. Sandra Champlain, who hosts Shades of the Afterlife on the Paranormal Podcast Network, is with us. Sandra, you've got a lot of experience with ghosts. What do you think they are?
Well, you're right with what you just said. The simple answer, George, and the dictionaries agree that a ghost is a person who no longer inhabits their body. However, because of the history of ghost stories, people commonly think of ghosts as these scary spirits that haunt us. And ghost stories first appeared in ancient Greece when a rumor began that the form of an old man with a long beard was rattling chains in a home. In a very short time, many people claimed to have this ghost also in their homes. And our ancestors were certainly just as fascinated as we are in the unknown. And great stories developed from highly creative authors. And these stories were so scary that people completely believed that the unexplained was the fault of these angry ghosts. So soon, funeral rituals even included trying to prevent ghosts. For instance, in 19th century Europe and America, the dead were carried out of the house feet first in order to prevent the spirit from looking back into the house and wanting to return. And listen to this, George, the Saxons of early England cut off the feet of their dead so that the ghost corpse would be unable to walk. Even the use of heavy tombstones came from the belief that ghosts needed to be weighed down so they won't escape. So what do I think about ghosts? Well, I believe, I actually know that when our bodies die, we each have an etheric body, and we can learn how to manipulate energy to make things happen, like turn on and off lights, put voices on recorders, put thoughts in people's minds, and give signs to our loved ones that we are very much still alive. And we also retain our personality and our sense of humor. So, George, if I go first, I'll do everything possible to let my family know that I'm still alive, and I will do my very best to find and haunt the Coast to Coast AM studio every chance I can to still be part of your show.
Good. You'll still be part of the Paranormal Podcast Network when we haunt you, right?
Right.
All right. And Sandra, you've been honored with your film in Italy. Tell us about that.
Oh, I'm just so grateful. I'm the producer of a brand new documentary afterlife film. It's called Rinaldi, Instrumental Transcommunication to the Other Side. And on Shades of the Afterlife, my very first episode, I interviewed Sonia Rinaldi, who's been working in Brazil in her laboratory for 30 years, doing these EVP recordings, connecting parents to their children. And in the past, maybe 4 or 5 years, she's worked with technology to actually capture pictures by filming static. And then when she plays it back, second by second, frame by frame, faces of the deceased children would show up there. So it's been 3 years in the making, and my film person, he flew to Brazil and interviewed parents all over the United States, and we have this beautiful documentary. And if any of the Coast to Coast listeners want to watch it, you can go to my website, wedontdie.com. It's right there on the homepage, and I'm super proud because everybody wants to believe that the afterlife is real, and this documentary, it proves that it is.
Well, we're proud of you too, Sandra. Thank you so much for your work on this show, on the Paranormal Podcast Network, and everything else you do. Up next, Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness. William Hallal joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me introduce our special guest, William Hallal, PhD, Professor Emeritus at George Washington University. He has published 7 books, hundreds of articles, consults to corporations and governments, and is a very frequent keynote speaker. He was cited by the Encyclopedia of the Future as one of the top 100 futurists in the world. And his book we're talking about tonight, Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness, explores a vision for the next stage of human evolution. William, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George.
I'm looking forward to this, and my gosh, I sure hope everything works out. I was reading your book for the last couple days, and if we don't do it right, we could be toast, can't we?
Well, that's really it. It's an existential moment in history, I think.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit more about your work. How'd you get involved in this?
Well, when I was a graduate student at Berkeley during the free speech movement, I was impressed by the beginnings of the computer revolution. Daniel Bell wrote a great book, The Coming of Post-Industrial Society, and that caught my attention. I was just fascinated with that. I thought, you know, what happens beyond industrialization? And I have studied that really all these years, 50 years now, as a scholar. My new book is my magnus opus. It culminates all this work, and I think it helps us understand where we are, where civilization is now, and where we're going.
People, they did a survey. People cannot spend more than a few hours away from their smartphones these days without going ballistic. What does that tell you?
Well, the social media thing and the whole digital revolution is driving what I call the age of consciousness. It's very simple. Artificial intelligence is automating knowledge work, and so it's driving attention up the hierarchy of consciousness to the subjective realm, subjective consciousness, and that's what I think of as higher consciousness. And so that's happening now. We did a little study at my company, TechCast, and we found that on average, 60% of decisions made by families, organizations, and governments are based on subjective consciousness, emotions, values, beliefs. That's consciousness, and so it's here. We're living beyond knowledge now, and that's pretty obvious by all this post-factual nonsense that's going around, people believing things that are not based upon fact.
Well, and the part of the problem with that is how do they know what's real and what isn't based on what's fact and what isn't? Because it's coming at them from so many different sources now.
Well, we need better ways to understand what's truth and what's false. The social media problem is really a mess. I have a piece out that just came out in CEO Magazine called How to Tame the Social Media Monster. We have to get control of this because it's really wreaking havoc with our public discourse and politics. Nobody knows what's real and what's not anymore. You're exactly right. It's a big problem.
Yeah, it sure is. And let's talk about how technology is driving this age of consciousness. What kind of technology are we talking about?
Well, the digital revolution, the smartphones, the social media, artificial intelligence, that kind of thing. I should make clear, though, before we go any further, that this book is a study based on social evolution. I've taken historic data and used it to trace the evolution of civilization from the agrarian era to industrialization, service economies, the knowledge age, and now we're entering an age of consciousness. We've moved beyond the knowledge age. I think about 2020 was the period that I target as moving into the beginnings of an age of consciousness. And I think that's pretty clear. I don't have much doubts about that. But it's not good consciousness. It's, as you point out, it's all of this madness that's appearing in the media. But it's an enormous problem because it's an existential crisis the world is facing. We have to address these enormous threats, climate, more pandemics, inequality, financial instability, all of those things, or we're not going to have a civilization. Because the world is not sustainable as it presently stands.
Now, when the change started for us, was it the smartphone primarily, or was it even the cell phone years before that, when we weren't able to send pictures and things like that, or even text at that time? It was simply just phone calls.
Well, the ordinary cell phone started this, but now everybody has smartphones, so they're connected to the internet, and they have access to all of this, really, the world's store of knowledge. So knowledge is everywhere. There's no shortage of knowledge. That's why we're no longer in the knowledge age. You know, that's passé now. That doesn't mean knowledge isn't important. Knowledge is still crucial, of course, and it will continue to grow. But decisions are being made on the basis of emotions, values, and beliefs, consciousness.
Our special guest is William Hallal. We're going to take calls with William next hour here on Coast to Coast as we are talking about this incredible shift that is happening all around the planet. And one thing I've noticed, for example, this crazy situation between Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah.
In Russia, they have arrested 4,600 people, 13,000 since this war began, who are demonstrating against their own government, which is unprecedented in Russia. And I got to believe it's the smartphone and the social networking that has rallied these people to go out there and do that, William.
That's exactly right. It's a great example of consciousness, of global consciousness. The world has united against Putin, and they're able to do it because of the social media, because of the digital revolution. That's what's new. It's the kind of thing that the UN was supposed to do, you know, isolate warring parties, but they weren't able to do it. But now we're able to do it because of social media and the digital revolution. It's happening because of the technology.
Yeah, there's no question. And how do you think this is going to unfold in the Ukraine with this constant barrage of people upset? I mean, does the Russian government have that capability of being overthrown from within?
I think the pressures are going to continue to mount on Putin. I think it's relentless. The whole world is against this. His own people, as you point out, know this is a stupid mistake because the Ukrainians are their friends and neighbors. And it just makes no sense that the constraints that the West is imposing are wreaking havoc with their economy. I don't see how he gets out of this. I think the pressure is going to reach such a point that either his generals will stage a coup d'etat, or his rich friends and the politicians will ease him out somehow, or even the riots in the streets will bring the whole regime down, and then anything could happen. But it's really a serious mistake that he's made. I don't see how he gets out of this.
You know, I don't know how he gets out of this either without having to either resign or his own generals take him over and take him out or something drastic like that, because
there is a possible resolution if Ukraine could be accepted as a neutral nation. That might appease Putin, but the West is not prepared to do that. The West seems to insist that any free country can join NATO. They seem to insist on that, and that's unacceptable to Putin. So I don't know how we get past that.
It's going to be a fascinating and troublesome next couple weeks, I'm afraid.
You know, it's really, I think, an opportunity in disguise, George. Putin has made a terrible strategic blunder. It's like when we went into Iraq. It's a really almost similar thing.
Somebody has given Putin bad information.
Well, he's isolated. He just totally miscalculated what's going on. He completely misjudged the willingness of the Ukrainians to defend themselves. They are ferocious about this. I don't see how he can control that country. So he's made a terrible mistake, and I think the upside is that if the West, if the world can keep pressuring him, it'll produce a collapse of his dictatorship, and that will send a signal around the world that autocracy is no longer tolerated. And that's, you know, a great problem we have now, autocrats around the world. That would really, I think, create a turning point where we get away from autocracies and rejuvenate the interest in democracies. So I think this could work out well, in spite of the fact that it's a horrible war, of course.
Absolutely. And looking at these refugees every day on television is just heartbreaking.
Terrible. I mean, the suffering is enormous. And it's played out, now that we're in a digital world, it's played out on video everywhere. The whole world knows it. They see what's going on. It's horrible. And the Russians are going to see it, because he can't really block the Russians from social media. Some of that's going to seep in. And the Russian people are going to see it.
When we went into Iraq under the auspices of weapons of mass destruction, which were never found and they were never there, quite frankly, nobody really stopped us. Nobody did anything. There was shock and awe. We bombed the heck out of Baghdad and everything else until Saddam, we brought him to his knees. He had to flee. They finally caught him in a hole and he got hung for his misdeeds. But nobody stopped us. Russia is doing almost the same thing, and definitely don't condone it at all, but it seems that they're in the same situation, but they're getting the brunt of it. We did not. How come?
Well, I think it's the character of the Ukrainian people. The Iraqis didn't think they could really withstand the American assault. And so they were very strategic about it. They faded into the background.
They took their uniforms off and ran.
Yeah, and they just turned to an insurgency.
Yes.
So they drove us crazy for years, you know, with the constant attacks and all that. And the Ukrainians may resort to that, but it looks like they could withstand this for weeks, maybe months, if they get the kinds of armaments that they want from us. I mean, the Javelin missiles are taking out tanks very effectively. They have Stinger missiles to take out aircraft. They're going to get fighter jets. So it's kind of, anything could happen. But even if it becomes an insurgency and Russia controls the country, I don't see how we can win. Those people are not going to give up, especially with the support, the military support and the whole world against Russia. Russia's a pariah state now. And it's terrible. They have ruined their reputation for decades. They will be seen as a warmonger.
Yes, and an aggressor. Unless Putin leaves and some other peaceful type Russian comes in. We'll have to see what happens. William, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you. Lots of folks are fascinated by your work, Beyond Knowledge, and how technology is driving an age of consciousness. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're with William Hallal. His book is called Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness. You've got a total of 7 books out now, William?
Yes, that's right. This is my 7th.
Good for you. Good for you. And what got you to write this book?
Well, it's kind of the logical conclusion of what I've been doing, George. As I say, I was impressed by the beginnings of the computer revolution when I was at Berkeley in the 60s, and I've just been studying that for all these years. And this is where it's heading. It's culminating. This is really an unusual period in history. We are, I think, privileged to be alive at this time when this dramatic change is taking place. I mean, we are reaching what I would see as a culmination of civilization on this planet. We're reaching a point where consciousness is the dominant challenge, and the activity that we are all engaged in, trying to figure out what's true and what we should be doing. So it's an enormous a change, and I don't think we understand it fully. I was impressed by the fact that Henry Kissinger wrote in Time magazine, really, that he thinks we're entering an age of consciousness right now. We just don't understand it. And I pay attention to Henry Kissinger. I think he's a pretty smart guy.
He is a smart guy. He's going to be 99 this year, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and he confirms that this is exactly happening. I don't think we fully understand it yet, but it's of enormous importance. The big challenge, of course, is consciousness implies addressing these enormous crises that have made the world unsustainable. The present global order can't work continuously. It can't take us past all this stuff, climate change and all that stuff. You can stop ordinary people on the street and ask them that, and they'll agree with you. They'll say, no, this is not going to do it. So there's a need for a revolution in thought. Every stage in evolution has been propelled by a revolution of thought. For instance, the Industrial Age was made possible by the Protestant ethic. The great sociologist Max Weber made that point clear, and I think most people accept that. You know, the economic man, the belief that if you work hard, save your money, and look after your self-interest, you'll be fine. And those are the values that have governed civilization for the last 200 years. But they're no longer adequate. That they are the problem today. Self-interest, power, and money. Those are the main problem today. We need something different now. We need to integrate across nations, across corporations, because the world is a de facto single system. The economic systems are unified. The IT systems are unified. We just don't have a system of governance to run the planet. And so we need something like what I call a global consciousness. And that term has a lot of cachet. You hear it very often.
Right.
The global response to the Ukrainian crisis is a great example of global consciousness. The world came together to address a global problem, global consciousness. We need that. We need more of that, so we can address these enormous challenges.
When Putin started amassing his troops near the border, and it was obvious something was going to happen here, you just don't do that for show, why didn't we go over there and sit down with him and say, what do you want? What's wrong?
Yeah.
You know, and nobody really seemed to have done that. And now we're hearing all kinds of stories that we might have had bioweapons labs in Ukraine, and the Ukraine is burning documents. You don't know who to believe anymore.
Well, I think the diplomatic corps was talking to Putin all along. I don't think that's quite true.
We don't know that. They haven't admitted that to us.
Well, I think they've said they've been dealing with Putin diplomatically. He just hasn't been responding. I think it's, but I think to be honest about it, I think we have to be fair. that the West has made mistakes here by insisting that NATO has, that Ukraine has a right to become a NATO country. We've really threatened Russia. That is the provocative item for Putin, and I think there's some justification for that. You know, when the Russians placed missiles in Cuba, that's equivalent to what we're doing in Ukraine.
Exactly.
And we couldn't tolerate that.
We almost went to war over that.
Yeah, and we almost went to had a nuclear war, trying to convince the Russians they had to take those missiles out. So, you know, we act the same way that the Russians are acting. So I don't think we're being fully honest about this, and I don't hear any give on the insistence that Ukraine could be a NATO country if it wants to be. I think we're being a little stubborn about that. In fact, I think if Ukraine were to become a neutral country, it would be good for everybody. It would be a buffer between Russia and Europe, and it could serve as a bridge. It could aid economic development in both Russia and Ukraine and Europe, I would think. It's a logical solution, but parties just can't seem to agree on it.
I think the mistake, William, that Putin made was that he went in a little too soon. He should have used a little more restraint, more negotiation, and he probably would have gotten what he wanted.
It's hard to say. He acts like he's really losing it, I think.
Like he's going nuts. There was an article today that said that he might have colon cancer and that he's dying. I mean, you don't know what to believe.
A lot of ego going on there. It doesn't have any practical purpose. I think it's just this fetish he has about restoring the USSR, you know, all of those Eastern Bloc countries. He wants to get them under his wing again, and it's just a crazy idea. It makes no sense.
So when we talk about consciousness, what do you talk about? What do you mean?
Well, I like to keep it very simple. Consciousness is a very mysterious thing, really. Scientists can't agree on what it is. There's enormous controversy about this, but I like to keep it operational. Emotions, values, beliefs, higher order thought. Things that we experience every day. We just don't think of it as consciousness because, you know, we live in consciousness. But it is the essence of life. Every day we are altering our consciousness. We're acting upon our consciousness. We're shaping our consciousness. We're interacting with other people that have different consciousness. And so we have to learn about a whole different domain, a different way of thinking. Instead of knowledge, which we've been doing for the last two decades, we have to think about consciousness now. Because that's really what shapes behavior.
Absolutely, in a big way, too.
And the reason we can't get anything done is we have all these stark differences in consciousness. You know, the political parties have different values and beliefs, and they're angry at one thing or another, or they're greedy, or they want power. Those are the forces that really drive behavior. And now we've reached a point in social evolution where we have to address that. It's really, George, it's like a teenager growing up and going through their own crisis of maturity. Anybody who's raised teenagers know that often they get into trouble because they don't know who they are, they don't know how to deal with the world. And so they flop around, they get into lots of trouble, they experience great pain. And at some point, pain becomes so severe that they shape up, they acknowledge reality, they accept the fact that they've got to figure out what they want to do, and they become responsible adults. That's roughly what the world has to do. We have to accept the fact that these problems are so enormous that they're going to destroy civilization unless we get our act together and start addressing them. We need a shift in consciousness, a global consciousness. And, you know, it's really you see it everywhere. Remember when Captain Kirk, William Shatner, went into a near-Earth orbit with Jeff Bezos?
Yes.
And he came back, he was flooded with emotion.
He was crying. He was so emotional. You're right.
Yeah. He experienced global consciousness. He saw the Earth as a whole system. And that's what astronauts usually experience. And so he experienced global consciousness. And we're going to see more of that as we go into space, because space lends itself to seeing to that perspective.
Edgar Mitchell, the late Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, was a friend of ours. When he went to the moon, he was so inspired, he came back and set up basically a consciousness network. It was called Noetic Institute.
Exactly. It's a big deal now.
It just changed his life.
Yeah. Let me offer something that your readers might find useful. If they go to beyondknowledge.org, they will find a good summary of the book. That would be very convenient for them. Beyondknowledge.org.
And how about your website with your name, Bill?
BillHallel.com.
That'll work too.
That's good too. Yeah.
Okay. Super. Indeed. If we went back into time and didn't do the technology that we've got today, we didn't do the smartphones, we didn't do any of this, where would we be?
Well, I don't think we can avoid those things. I think that's a necessary phase in the life cycle of evolution. What I've learned in mapping the stages of social evolution is that it forms a very precise life cycle. It's the life cycle for civilization on the planet. Just like the life cycle of a culture, a bacteria, or a person, a human being. And we're reaching the end of that life cycle right now. It's very precise. Most people don't see this, but it's what came out of this study I did of social evolution. And so this is a very unique point in history, and I don't think we understand that, but we've got to, if we want to get through this. And that's what my book is about and what I talk about. I'm trying to get people to understand what's going on historically so they can see it in perspective and frame the problem and show people what has to be done. And I think it helps. I get very favorable responses. Most people find it comforting to see that there's a possible resolution to this, because the doom and gloom is thick. The last few decades have been so terrible.
And it's real.
Well, of course it is. The situation is terrible. But we have to get past the doom and gloom. Doom and gloom is self-defeating. It forces you into inaction. You don't do anything. What we need is to have faith in social evolution, the powerful forces of the planet evolving through its life cycle. That's bigger than any of us, and it's inexorable. It's going to go on. It's going on right now. And we have to have faith in that, and faith in the human nature, human spirit, that always succeeds. And if we can have faith in those things, if we can see that, see the way this is playing out, then we can have hope that it's going to work out, and then we can act. We can take action.
William, we've got a guest who does global consciousness intention experiments, and she's uncanny. She has had crime diminish when she concentrates on it globally and everything else.
Really?
And,
wow.
And we tried a little bit with her advice. I'd like to get her back on the program to try to get this Ukraine-Russian situation resolved as well. But it's fascinating how the global consciousness connects like a wireless internet.
It is.
And things get done.
Yeah, you know, there was a great Jesuit anthropologist, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. He's famous, especially among Christian circles. And he predicted this like 50, 70 years ago. He saw that the world was going to evolve into a web of consciousness that enveloped the entire Earth. He called it the New Sphere. That's how I start my book, by pointing out that Teilhard de Chardin's New Sphere is, in fact, happening right now. It's happening right now. We are creating a web of consciousness that encloses the entire Earth. It's an amazing thing.
It is an amazing thing indeed. And the book is out, Beyond Knowledge, How Technology is Driving an Age of Consciousness. And again, give us that website for people who want to go to it.
BillHallel.com. That's H-A-L-A-L, or just go to beyondknowledge.org and you will get a synopsis of the book.
Bill, we're going to take calls with you next hour here on Coast to Coast.
I'm looking forward to it. I'd like to talk to some of your listeners.
Your first-time guest. Where have you been all the time?
Well, I'm here now.
Yeah, you are. There you are. Would we like some of your other books that you wrote? Would it fit what we're talking about?
Well, yeah, my last book, the previous one, was Technology's Promise. It outlined the entire technology revolution based on the work of my company, TechCast. We pulled the knowledge of 200 thought leaders around the world to forecast breakthroughs in technology, social trends, and wildcards, and were remarkably accurate. I think it's one of the best forecasting systems in the world.
Can you believe we're into 2022 already?
It's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing how things are changing. It's so exciting. It's the most exciting thing going on, I think, to see the world change in your lifetime. Change so dramatically.
You know, in spite of what's going on, it is an exciting time, isn't it?
It is. And the potential is enormous. If we could just get past these crises that are blocking progress, and we can. We could do that if we adopt the same kind of global response that people are doing to the Ukrainian crisis.
All right, we're going to come back and take some calls.